freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk. What is that sound of screaming? All the Mariners fans, Brock, screaming with joy after maybe the most fun game of the year. I feel like we've said that a whole bunch of times. I started the show yesterday saying how much I just enjoy coming into work every day, getting to talk about this team. And today is no different. We are on location. It says right in front of us, the Mariners welcome Brock and Salk. We're here at Safeco Field to talk to Scott Servais at 9:30 this morning, a guy who's now managing a team that is 43 and 24, 6.5 games ahead of Anaheim, half a game clear of Houston. Brock, they are, since Robinson Cano got hurt, 20-7.
What?
It just continues.
It's amazing.
And you know what is really cool about this group? And every team has a different identity and personality. And as Shannon said, this team is taking on more and more the personality of the skipper, who I know you want to talk about at length here at 7:30 at the job he has done. And maybe the skipper, maybe dad is so much fun because his kids are having a ball. As much as you and I are and the 20-some thousand there last night and everybody else, if truly this team is taking on the personality of their manager, then he must be one fun guy because his team is having just a ball playing and believing in what they're doing. And last night was, I don't know, is this the best win? Is this the coolest win? Is this the most fun win? It had some of the most impactful plays of this entire season. And I think a few of our favorites of the entire year, including something, you know, straight out of Star Wars that Mitch Haniger got done in that fifth inning.
What a play. And last night was one of those games, Brock, where you start, okay, what was your favorite moment? I've been saying this after basically every game. All right, what will I remember from this game? When you're having memory issues like I already seem to be at age 40, you have to start thinking about what you'll remember in order to actually
Are you tweeting that
it
on a nightly basis? Because I saw the other night, game 63, you know, like, doesn't Facebook, which, by the way, is where you're going to find the broadcast today, don't they do something like, you know, show, you know, 10 years ago, this is what you tweeted, or you had this post 5 years ago. Maybe, Salky, you should do that on a nightly basis, you know, so when a book is written about this season, you can go back and say, oh, that's right, game 64, oh, that's right, game 65, game 66, and just take a moment from it. And, yeah, last night was chock full of a bunch of them, a bunch of really, you know, in the course of what's been a phenomenal ride, some of the most memorable moments already this season.
Yeah, I would say that the 2 nights ago it was very clear what the memory would be. Right, it was Frenchie LeBlanc screaming in excitement like Scott Cochran, the strength coach at Alabama,
yes,
after he struck out Justin Upton. He got that fa-fa. He's got that fa. Like, he's just guys from Alabama. Who knows? I mean, he was so excited after striking out Justin Upton with the bases loaded and one and two outs in the fifth. And just, I got the fire! I got the fire, fire!
Are we going to play that for Scott at 9:30?
Maybe. We may have to do that. Yes. Last night, I'll give you four options, and one of them I think is clearly number one, but three others deserve merit. The one that probably is going to win it is this. You just don't see defensive plays like this very often. Cut
for Valbuena chugging for second base. He stuttered for a second. Here comes the throw. The tag, Segura behind the back, and it gets Valbuena on the ankle. Mitch Haniger doing it all tonight. A couple of home runs and an absolute laser beam from right field in the corner where nobody could see him.
All right, Brock, favorite part of that play, is it Haniger's throw? Quite frankly, when you watch the replay from behind, is it the fact that Haniger is able to make the transfer as quick as he does? Oh. His throw, which is on a line.
243
look
feet.
Look where it is. I mean, we are looking at it in front of us. Look where he was behind that right field corner all the way to second base. Is it Segura's behind-the-back tag? Is it Segura's little dance move that he pulled afterwards? Or is it the fact that Valbuena tried to pimp a single down the right field line?
Or was it Titus saying, did the wall make that throw? I think he even asked me.
Yeah.
I think he asked me to rewind that. He's like, rewind that. I think the wall made that throw came straight out of the wall.
Amazing.
It was sick. It was when you watch that transfer, Mike, and we talk about quick releases in football, right? Quarterback's got quick release, Marino-esque release. That was a Marino-esque release, 243 feet on, and he said, I love Mitch afterwards. Like, well, it was a little high. Well, okay. Yeah, it was 2 feet away. And then it was Gene's instincts, man.
Yeah.
It was his instincts to know, right? There's no way I can do this traditionally. And I'm going to reach from behind because I can feel that fat Valbuena, that cocky fat Valbuena pimping that double. And I can feel him coming down and I'm going to slam this sucker right on his ankle.
Who pimps a double? Who pimps a double? What are you doing, Valbuena?
Who has a piano on his back rounding first base? Did you see him rounding first base?
I wish I could have been on the air last night doing Angels post-game show so I could have said Valbuena. Valbuena, 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 what are you doing pimping a double? I still wonder whether or not Ian Kinsler is going to have words for him. Ian Kinsler doesn't even like them celebrating in the WBC. How's he going to feel about that? All right, that's my favorite moment. Let me give you a couple others that I personally love.
Valbuena,
sure you love as well.
Valbuena, Valbuena.
Thank
give
you,
them back. You know what? Give them back to the Mets.
I said, send them to Mahoning Valley. They haven't even started their season. All right. How about this, Brock? This turned out to be a huge play in the game with D. Gordon on second base. Gene Segura at the plate. He does this.
The 0-2. Swing, line drive, softly hit, fair ball, first base side, it hits off the retaining wall, here comes D, steaming around third, he's coming home, D gallops across home, he scores standing, and Gene Segura with two strikes against him gives the Mariners a two-run lead in the bottom of the seventh. It's 5-3 Mariners.
Three things I love about that play. One, obviously gave them some relief, and Gene Segura is just fun to watch. Two, watching D. Gordon run around the bases from second to home, he's clearly going to score. I mean, Nelson Cruz scores on that play. D. Gordon's arguably is one of the two fastest guys in baseball, right, along with Byron Buxton. He's running as hard as he possibly can around the base. They had a shot. Did you see that shot of him rounding third? It was just a really quick flash to him, and he's like, his face is like, it's every ounce of energy into scoring what is going to be incredibly easily from second base on a double. I love that about him. And then finally, it just shows again how much Mike Soch is a bad manager. Mm-hmm. I know there's going to be some people ripping Scott Service for last night. They're wrong, and we can talk about them a little bit later. Mike Soch is the one who's a bad manager, and you saw it again last night. He's got one lefty in his pen. He brings him in to face the lefty, D. Gordon, and then with a string of righties headed up, including two who totally crush left-handers, he decides to leave in the lefty to face Segura. Why? If you're going to go to the righty anyway because he's going to have to get Haniger and Cruz, why in the world would you leave him in to face Segura?
So he could do damage just like that.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for sabotaging your own team.
And I am going to guess that the baseball people out there, especially those that coach or manage, and I know we've got a few of those guys that weigh in every once in a while, have to love, Mike, the sudden change moments. That Mike Trout hits a home run in the bottom or the top of that inning, and there's a little sudden change, a little confidence. Oh, my gosh, this is a one-run game. And what does this team constantly do in those sudden change moments? They constantly respond. They come right back. They get the double. They get the hit there to score a run. Anytime, over the course of the season, anytime that other team and that opponent does a little something, this team just shows some grit and resolve to come right back.
Great point. Let me see if we can get to two more real quick. Edwin Diaz in the ninth. I would say this is one of the better moments.
Here's the stretch and the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss and a slider. Strike three and it's over. Sugar with a save. How sweet it is. The Mariners beat the Angels by a score of 6-3.
So that was the strikeout on Trout. I mean, that's nice because it's a little revenge after the two home runs he's already hit, four in the last two games. Thanks, Mike. We really appreciate you stopping by. I like the first strikeout where he was just blowing gas to Maldonado. Like, hey, what's up? Here's 97, yes, and 98 above your head.
Good night.
Good luck.
Yes. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Yeah. No chance. A guy that tried to bunt the night before. Yeah, I love strength on strength. Your best on their best. Mike Trout's the best player going in baseball right now. And Eddie Diaz, when he has this stuff, you even have no chance. You sit down. And that was an awesome stamp to it. And then can we finally define what D. Gordon does?
Yeah, let's do this for a final great moment. And there were more to him. You could have either of Haniger's home runs, Healy's first one, but this one stood out as well.
Done it again. Goodbye, baseball. Off the scoreboard. Beyond the Angel bullpen, Ryan Healy. with his second home run of the ball game. He has 12 on the year, and it's now the Mariners 6 and the Angels 3.
The home run was great, Brock. But what is it that D. Gordon's doing afterwards?
I don't know.
Assembly line? An assembly line of high fives?
I mean, the Congo line's got to form behind you, so he doesn't do that. He's the first to jump out.
A receiving line like at a wedding?
Probably.
I think maybe it's an assembly line of inclusion because it's bringing everybody to the table. Whatever it is, it's another fun win for the Mariners. It's 7:10, time for Need to Know.
You sit down.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, the Mariners have now won or split 10 straight series, the third longest in their history of streaks. Mm. The Mariners win 6-3 over the Angels. They will go for a sweep today. Mitch Haniger and Ryan Healy, each with two home runs last night. Mike Leake allowed just one earned run over six innings to collect another win. They have been phenomenal, Brock. And what I just think is so amazing is 6.5 games up now on Anaheim, a chance to make it 7.5 today, and a huge, huge game. Not because you got to win right now at this point in the season. You can afford a loss. But what you would do to the Angels with a win today, I think would be really large. I mean, 7.5 out, the Angels are starting to think about selling at that point, right? And if they start to quit on their season with Ohtani already hurt, guys pimping doubles down the line, every other problem that they've got, they may end up being sellers by the time the deadline shows up. So a really big game still for the Mariners today. Uh-oh, Brock's out. Brock's battery is out. Brock quit. There we go. Use
figures.
There we go.
Don't you worry about me. I'm right here. Don't you worry about me. And we got the long arms of the log and replace those batteries. Salky, the Mariners are now 24-10 since May 8th. That's the best record in baseball. These Mariner game notes, you could read them. You could spend 25 minutes of our show going through all of these stats and all of these numbers that the Mariners are doing. But all you really need to do is watch with your eyes. These guys are having the time of their lives. This is the best run we have seen in 10 years. It's the flagship of these Seattle Mariners. Yeah, and a chance to sweep these Angels today, I'll be rooting hard.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks held their first day of mandatory minicamp yesterday, as expected. Earl Thomas did not report, but Frank Clark and Byron Maxwell were both in attendance, though Clark was not able to practice with the team due to an apparent hamstring injury. I don't think Earl's ever going to play for the Seahawks again. If he does, it'll be for a game or so, the way we saw Dwayne Brown play one game for Houston last year before getting dealt. I just getting more and more the sense that there's not going to be any sort of resolution to this contract dispute. And I don't know whether they'll be able to make a deal or not. I don't know what sort of trade they'll be able to make, but it just seems harder and harder to imagine Earl Thomas playing for this team.
Yeah, and going out to practice and having a chance to watch that yesterday, a couple things stick out more than anything else, and that is the two best players on this team, especially without Earl, or Bobby and Russell, and those guys continue to put on a show. Bobby is, it looks as massive as he's ever looked as a Seahawk. I don't know if that's just because of his presence growing with some of the stars around him that have all departed, but there's no question who the leader is there, and Russell was sharp, man. Russell was throwing the ball all over the yard. Your rookie running back was getting more and more run with the number ones. Yeah, there was some tremendous, as Pete said, tremendous energy in competition. That there is. There may not be the star power, and certainly the proven star power of the past, but there is a whole lot of energy and competition going down at the Seahawks headquarters.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, as we mentioned, Mariners will go for the sweep today. Marco Gonzalez gets the ball, a 1-10 first pitch here at Safeco Field. The only broadcast over-the-air place you can hear this game is right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. So the pregame show will start at noon, not on television today, so you can listen to it here on 710. We'll also be talking to Scott Servais, the skipper of this group that is 43-24. He will join us at 9:30 this morning. And I'll continue to call for it, and I know it won't happen until after Jerry Dipoto gets his extension, but Scott Servais deserves an extension as the manager of the Mariners. And I know that there are those out there complaining about some of his in-game decision-making. I disagree with you. I think it's actually been pretty good, and I would support what he did last night in pitching to Mike Trout, even though it backfired with the home run. It didn't give up the lead. He did the right thing. You don't walk a guy and bring a tying run to the plate when you don't need to. I'm sorry. But beyond that, what he's done overall to build a culture for this team, I think has been phenomenal, and he deserves a tremendous amount of credit for it.
Yeah, and it will be great to see Marco Gonzalez hopefully keep this going and keep the starting pitching in a rhythm and in a place, Mike, that also we have haven't seen over the last decade. And if you start to point to guys as being the different biggest difference makers, that conversation we always seemingly have before the season is we sit in the spring and say, hey, if this guy really pops or this guy really emerges or this guy has a career year, what kind of impact can it have? Well, when Marco Gonzalez is doing what he is doing, is clearly your second best pitcher the last 10 plus starts, being as just dynamic and as filthy as anybody as you've got going, that's a huge positive, and that's the guy you want on the mound looking for the sweep.
All right, there you go. Three things you need to know. We do that every single morning right at 7:10. Three most important things going on, and man, these Mariners, Brock, just continue to be right in the top of that list every single day. This is so fun. Everybody I'm texting with and just talking to at night. Heather came in last night. She'd been out right after Healy hit that second home run. The first thing she saw was D. Gordon doing the conga line. I mean, somebody, I get some suggestions here on the text machine as to what that might be. Like the old Almost Live skit, high-fiving white guys. That's what D kind of reminds me of with all the people he's high-fiving. Another one's wondering if it could be a home run communion. Like, ooh, everyone's on one side, and D's sort of going down the list and, like, like putting a cracker in everybody's mouth. Does that count? Is it a home run communion?
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's not bad. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Did you have some time over at Seahawks yesterday?
Sure did.
What'd you see?
Well, I saw, as expected, Byron Maxwell there, and he was back with the starting lineup over on the right side. Frank Clark was there having a good time, but unfortunately, because of a tight hamstring, he couldn't do anything. Saw some good running again by Chris Carson. Rashad Penny did some good running. Some Stringfellow looks like he's intriguing at the wide receiver position. I know the Keenan Reynolds made a couple good catches. So, interesting day. And then, of course, just watching.
For those
who
don't know that name, John, can you just explain who Keenan Reynolds is?
Keenan Reynolds is a former Baltimore Raven wide receiver who they just picked up a few weeks ago, brought in, and he had been drafted. He's good returner, and so kind of that one position, wide receiver for that last spot, keeps getting more interesting. You know, David Moore has had a very good offseason, and he's a physical stud at this receiver position. So they got some interesting decisions there. And of course, the big thing is just kind of watching the fallout with Earl Thomas not there. And thought it was interesting that Tedrick Thompson was able to go out there and really go with the first team at free safety, with Bradley McDougal at strong safety. And at different times, then you're going to see Delano Hill at strong and maybe McDougal at free. So looks like they're now starting to sort it out, knowing that Earl Thomas is going to hold out in the training camp.
You know, John, you referenced there the last spot, and that's what it's been over the last few training camps for the Seahawks. There are a bunch of receivers pretty much locked in, either with contract or draft status or anything else. Outside of Tyler and Doug, those two are totally given locks. John, I don't know how 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 right now stacks up, like in their meeting rooms, and as they look at it and as they evaluate it, I think 3 through 10 is pretty darn wide open.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because we really haven't seen a lot in the open sessions with Amara Darboh. He hasn't really done a lot of great things. I know in the first open session that we were able to see, he had some tightness in the legs and really was kind of in and out of plays. And so I haven't really seen any big advancement there. And Jaren Brown looks like a pretty good body, but you know, other than say 9 routes and 7 routes, does he have the full route tree that he's able to come out and do some things? No, I would agree. If the 3 through whatever number is pretty, and again, you're right, there's probably a big gap right now between 1 and 2 and 3 and the rest.
Anybody else really strike you, just that eye test, right? Is the fans, so they're going to wrap up tomorrow, and then right, the next time that we all see them, it'll be with the fans over there on the berm. Was there anybody that just struck you to your eye, like, wow, he has really either added weight, he has lost weight, he's moving differently? Was there anybody or a couple guys that jumped out in that manner?
Well, there's no question the improvement of Chris Carson, I think, is one of the most noticeable, because he's bigger upper body, he's running so well, he really looks sensational. So I think, you know, he's the one that really strikes your eye. Naturally, Russell Wilson is having, I think, an exceptional offseason, the way he's moving around and throwing. So I thought that was pretty good. I think that you can see, even though it's not pronounced, that Shaquille Griffin looks solid at the left cornerback position. He just kind of looks solid there. But I think Chris Carson clearly gets the eye test.
Hey, Frank Clark misses most of the practice with the hamstring injury. Real? Concerning? I mean, like, how should I feel about this?
No,
is this a hamstring like he can't possibly practice, or a hamstring like, you know, I didn't show up for voluntaries and I'm really not that happy about my contract, so my hammy's barking?
No, I don't think so. I think, okay. I mean, he was doing some, individual stuff, and he was working, and you can see he was having a good time just being back here. So I don't think you read anything into it.
Hey, what do you make of the word speculation, John? I mean, you've been a reporter for a very long time. Is there a difference between speculating and reporting?
Mm-hmm, I would think so, yeah. Because
Richard Sherman know that?
What was he speculating about?
No, he's upset that people have been speculating that he's in Earl's ear, kind of chirping at him and trying to blow up the Seahawks. And there has been some speculation. I know Brock has speculated about that. I have. Mm-hmm. Others have as well, because it makes some logical sense. I haven't seen it reported anywhere. But that didn't stop Richard from saying, oh, that's fake news. People are out there reporting and making that up. My question for you is there a difference between speculating and reporting?
Yeah, because in speculating, I mean, there's a better chance than not that it might not be true.
Right.
And that's where, you know, you put speculation out there, and it can be shot down, and it can be untrue. And so, you know, it's hard to tell. We're not seeing the texts going back and forth or the phone calls going back and forth between one player and another. And if I'm Richard and I hear that, I would be a little bit upset, because it makes him look like he's trying to sabotage the team. I know that when he talked yesterday, he says that, hey, they moved on from me, I've moved on from them.
Sure he has. Sure he has.
But you know he's never going to miss a chance to make an opinion.
A week ago that he said Earl Thomas should be the highest paid safety in the game. Yeah. Sure you've moved on, Richard. It's amazing how good you are just cutting ties in your mind. You don't hold any grudges. Nope. You're just as good as I am at that, Richard. Trust me, it takes one to know one. I know exactly who you are, and you hold grudges just like me, you liar. Let's do the wild card.
Time now for the wild card. Wild
card. Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
If you had to have twice as many of one body part, which body part would you duplicate?
I would say the hands. I mean, hands and arms, because it looks pretty crazy to just have four hands hanging out at the end of the limb. That would be pretty bad. So I think having an extra arm, because, I mean, think of the advantage. I mean, you know, I can work in the database and eat at the same time, because then I can have, you know, my hands working on the computer and then be able to, you know, have food and maybe have coffee and stuff like that.
Great.
So I would say, you know, the arms, the limbs, and the hand, that would be the better thing. You know, if you have two extra legs, what good's that going to do you? Plus, it's hard to get good pants.
I don't know. It seems to work pretty well for the horse. Think how fast they are. You could be like a centaur.
Good balance.
Yeah, but see, the problem is, I mean, what happens to horses? I mean, they're at the service of the owner.
Well, that's
so they don't have any stature.
But if they had arms that went with the four legs, think of the possibilities, John.
That's
all right.
True.
Goodbye. Thank you, John. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow. All right, John Clayton with us every single day at 7:15.
Bro, why do you eat the microphone?
What are you talking
takes
about?
One and no one. You started to almost.
Well, it's true.
Eat the mic,
Richard. Do you not understand the difference between speculation and reporting? I don't know whether or not Richard Sherman is influencing Earl Thomas, but I absolutely believe it's a possibility, and I'm not reporting that, Richard. I just think it's true. How's that? It's my own thought. I'm allowed to think whatever I want. It's not lazy reporting, because it's not reporting.
But the beauty,
it's just what I think.
But the beauty is, even if there are tapes, it really doesn't matter.
He doesn't care.
He really
doesn't care about the reality. He cares about his own story.
Yep.
Whatever. All right.
Richard.
You can listen to the show here.
What
on the
were you
710,
doing?
710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, Brock, I've got a list of, what, 2, 4, 6, 8 things, I believe, that Scott Service is doing well that he said he would do well. It's next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
So good to be at Safeco Field this morning. Hope you guys are having a good day. It's Brock and Salk. Every day is a good day after a win, man. We're just watching the Mariners win every single night, and getting a chance to come in and talk about it, Brock, has been a joy for us. We started talking, a couple of weeks ago about whether or not it was time to extend the two guys who are, I think, most responsible for what the Mariners have done so far this year, Jerry DePoto and Scott Service. You probably would have to do it in that order, and we probably spent more time at the moment talking about Jerry DePoto and whether he deserved it, and I still think that's probably going to get done. at some point here in the next couple of weeks before the All-Star break, we'll wait and see. But last night, again, I found myself thinking about Scott Servais and all of the things he said he was going to do when he got here,
yep,
and how many of them have been instrumental in the culture that he has built. It was not just built this year. Scott's not having success because he turned himself into a good manager. He's having success because of everything he did in the first couple of years, staying true to an identity, yeah, true to what he wanted to do, and now he's really starting to see those things pay off.
And I think it really resonates, Mike, because I think that was one of the greatest challenges of the previous regime. And Jack Zrinjic was given multiple opportunities with different managers, and you just kind of saw that pendulum swing, you know, players manager, players coach, old school, new school, old school, home run hitters, bring the fences. I mean, it was just constant change, and there just wasn't really that conviction that this is exactly what we're going
to
do.
So we went back and went to Scott's opening press conference when he was first announced. Howdy, are these from the press conference or from our first interview with him? I don't know. Which are they from?
They're from the opening presser, and then there might be one or two cuts from earlier in the first season.
Okay, perfect. So these are cuts of Scott from the very beginning, and how some of the things he said have proven to be true. And the first one I started thinking about, Brock, was that he wanted them to be tough to play against. We heard him say it. He said it to us about a dozen times. It was one of the very first things he demanded when he got here. And I would say his team finally has that. They are tough to play against. They compete every inning. Here was Scott from his opening press conference.
We need to do a better job of getting on base. You know, that's the one thing that we have to get better. We have to create more opportunities to score runs. It's really hard to hit home runs every night and win games. Nelly had an unbelievable year last year. We know what Robbie can do, what Seager's about. You know, the core is there. I think when putting a roster together, you got to have balance and you got to have depth. There are going to be injuries. There are going to be guys that don't perform the way you think they're going to be, you know, perform.
Would you say that that defines what this team is right now?
Yeah, I think so. And I sure like what you had heard a couple weeks ago. Just competitive innings, man. It just doesn't matter. There's no bats just given away. That the other team responds, which you're going to have. And, you know, when you're facing the best baseball player on this planet, he's going to make things happen. He's going to make amazing plays in the outfield. He's going to do things with his bat that others can't do. But, you know, how do you respond to that? And this team, through this first 60-some games, has just especially been incredibly consistent. But really, as you said, that was laid year one. Because that team did it. And last year, it probably goes unnoticed in some ways, but I know they're proud internally of overcoming 40 different pitchers that mm-hmm. they had to use and a major league record number of starters that they had to use.
And hanging in there until really the last month or so of the season when finally they just succumbed to it. But, yeah, they've been resilient, and that's another thing Scott has talked about since the beginning. He's preached resilience, and they've survived so many of those difficult moments from the injuries last year, Brock, and not just the pitcher injuries, but they've had some major injuries on the field as well. Last year was Haniger Segura and all the ones that they dealt with. They've dealt with travel. They've dealt with bad losses, of course, like every team does. Yep. And then this year, I think all preparing them to deal with the big loss of their best player in Robinson Cano, not to mention the complete lack of anything positive from Felix Hernandez.
Yes.
I mean, the two guys who get paid the most on this team, one of them is their fifth starter at best, and the other one has been suspended for 80 games after being hurt. And they have played better since. They are 20-7. They are playing essentially .750 ball since Robinson Cano got hurt. Brock, that's unheard of.
That's good.
That's better than good.
Good.
Honestly, that is better than good.
Yes.
So their resilience has been incredible. I also noticed the camaraderie, and I know that's something Scott has spent a lot of time on. I think it's a better description for what this team has than chemistry. I think their camaraderie is even better than their chemistry. It's a better description, and you saw it last night. We've talked about it with D. Gordon going down. Do we like the home run communion?
The home run communion's pretty good. That would kind of associate though something like in the mouth. This is a little bit more like patty cake, like the home run game of patty cake.
Yeah,
or something.
But it's so inclusive. Patty cake's more of a one-on-one thing. This involves a whole grouping of
yes.
people. Regardless, whatever it is. This was a priority of Scott's from day one when he really went through and attempted to make them get to know each other. He forced them every day in spring training for the last 3 years to have these team meetings where one of the biggest priorities was to get to know each other. It's hard to like somebody if you don't ever get a chance to know them. And he forced the Latin guys to hang out with the English-speaking guys. And he forced people from one neighborhood to hang out with another. And you don't just get to be in your little cliques all the time. You've actually got to get to know each other. Hey, you, pitcher. you don't know any of the hitters on this team, you better take them out to eat, and you're going to learn a little bit about each one of your teammates. Yeah. Scott Servais talked about this, cut 14, in his very first press conference.
I think the big thing is that the Mariners fans deserve that. Okay, this is a chance to have a great organization, to be a part of building a culture that starts. Everybody in this organization is involved in building that culture, and I'm going to play my role. I'm excited. I really, really can't wait for the 2016 season to start. I wish it started tomorrow. I am ready to roll.
Yeah, it's almost Remember the Titans-esque, as you were talking about that, right? That was on TV over the weekend, and it's one of those that I just immediately don't flip by when it's on, and you two are going to room together, right? West Side and Best Side, and you two are going to have to be the kind of the two alphas that started. That's right.
Sunshine.
But you're all going to get to know one another, man, and it is it's pretty darn evident in this clubhouse. And really, if you sit at this game sometime, if you're coming today to the 1 o'clock first pitch, if you're coming, just watch the Mariners dugout. Just watch those guys and the enjoyment they have from the top down. It's pretty impressive.
Well, one of the reasons it's so good is that he's empowered his leaders. He is not he may be the spokesman who speaks after every game, but he has really empowered the veterans on this team to make it their team. He talked about it right at the beginning.
I think it's important that players understand it's their team. It is really about the players. They're the ones that are out there every day. We're going to put them in a position to have success, give them all the tools they need to do it, and then let them go play. And
well,
it is their game.
Gene Segura and Nelson Cruz and D. Gordon, three of the biggest leaders on this team, the opportunity to go out there and do their thing.
Yeah, John Morosi made this point yesterday, and I'll read your body language every once in a while, Salk, when we have guests on and everything, and when you're nodding, or I can just see your expression when maybe you hear something that you hadn't thought about. When Morosi said, Servais is one of the few that actually played. That when you actually look at these...
He said DePoto was one of the few.
Excuse me. DePoto was one of the few. That's exactly right. The skipper, a bunch of the skippers have played. DePoto is one that has actually played the game, and he wants somebody in that dugout that's going to think like him, that has that very same understanding that it is not about them and their ego.
Well, the next one actually also has to do with their history, and this is Scott's history as a player development guy, and there's no doubt that developing and teaching young players, each manager is going to have his own strength. I know there's a lot of people annoyed today because they don't like the way Scott managed the game last night. I don't mind it. In fact, I like the way he handled it, and he'll join us this morning at 9:30. We can ask him about it. But ultimately, the strength of Scott's management is not his game management. The strength is what he's done in building a clubhouse camaraderie and chemistry. He said giving guys an opportunity to go out there and win, and specifically teaching and developing young players. And that is core. I think Scott is a teacher. Mike Zunino, Mitch Haniger, Guillermo Heredia, Ben Gamel, others who have improved under his tutelage. That's not an accident that Mike Zunino, who looked like a lost cause, has turned himself into a really good and productive player. And in fact, the day he got here, Zunino was one of the guys Scott mentioned.
I'll be honest, the guy I'm most intrigued with is Mike Zunino. You know, he's a catcher, young catcher. That's what I was at one point in my career, and I also struggled mightily offensively early in my career. I went my first full year and didn't hit a home run in the big leagues. So I had to learn how to hit in the big leagues. And obviously he's had his struggles, but he's a tremendous player. I saw this guy in college. I thought he was the best player in the country the year he came out of the draft. I loved him. You know, we didn't pick high at the time, but you know, there's a lot of upside in Mike, and everything I've heard about his makeup. He's a worker. He's a gamer. The defense is certainly there. We just got to get more consistent with the bat.
So there you go. It's happened for Mike Zunino. A couple other ones I just wanted to hit on quickly, Brock. One, he's relentlessly positive. And I know this is sort of close to resilience. They're cousins. I mean, I think one may lead to the other. But he has been relentlessly positive ever since he got here. I believe it's infected his entire club. They expect to succeed even when something happens, even while Twitter is going nuts that Mike Trout has hit another home run. They're just thinking about how they're going to come right back and score in the bottom of that inning, and that's exactly what they did last night. They've played really well fundamentally.
Agreed.
Well. And maybe this is a corollary to his teaching ability, but his teams have gotten better at playing smart. And it's not to say they don't make errors. They do. They made one last night. But they don't beat themselves generally, and they especially don't beat themselves mentally. And I wonder how much of that reflects back to those chalk talks and the things that he's done in spring training every year, that some kind of wondered, hey, will this actually work? And others would say, no, look at it. It has worked. They don't make dumb mistakes. They don't beat themselves, and they let the Rays and the Angels and other teams do dumber stuff and find ways to lose.
And, yeah, you throw all that together, you're 43-24.
That's exactly right.
You throw all that together, you're probably looking at an extension for both of these guys that that absolutely deserve it. They're one of the darlings of all of baseball. There's only one team they're looking up to in the win column in all of baseball. And I believe that team comes in here for four after this sweep this afternoon.
Great stuff. We'll talk to Scott this morning at 9:30. Looking forward to it. The skipper in with us as we are down at Safeco Field after another Mariners exciting win last night. A big one as they win the series against Anaheim and have a chance to go for the sweep. 1:10 first pitch today. You'll hear it right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. All right, back to the baseball in about 15 minutes. Before we do so, and coming up next, Brock, you got to watch yesterday. You saw the quarterbacks. I want some takeaways next on Brock and Salk.
Good.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Hope you guys are having a good morning. It's Brock and Salk. We are down at Safeco Field on 710 ESPN Seattle. Looking forward to a 1 o'clock start today. Of course, noon pregame show here on 710. Brock, three good football questions, and we'll jump back to the baseball. Scott Service will join us at 9:30 this morning for his team that just keeps on winning. But you were over at Seahawks minicamp, first day of the mandatory version.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's start with the question I want to know, which is about the safeties. If Earl Thomas isn't going to play, you've got two choices. You can put McDougal at either free or strong, and then you can have Delano Hill or Tedrick Thompson, two guys who were rookies last year.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you think will get more playing time?
Which one do I prefer, or which one's going to get more playing time? The one that's going to get more playing time is the one that, when the pads come on, make the biggest difference. So this is all great right now, and one day they're looking at it down one road, and the next day they're going to evaluate and give Tedrick the reps and look at it that way. But ultimately, this is going to come down to when the pads come on, and especially for Delano. He's got to be the enforcer. I think Bradley McDougal is capable. I think he's more capable playing center field. I don't think he is a thumper. When we saw that last year, when he, you know, did a little bit of both of these positions, I kind of like him back as free safety, deeper than the deepest, knowing my strengths, knowing my weaknesses. I don't see a guy that can come up and intimidate. And at that position in this scheme, you're playing cover three, whether you're in hook zone or you're coming up as the eighth defender and you're the unblocked guy, I got to feel your thump, man. I got to, and not only me, those fullbacks, those tight ends, those running backs, those pulling guards, all of those guys that Cam Chancellor obliterated through the years. Bradley McDougal didn't have that in his tool set. Does Delano Hill? To be determined. To be determined. And he should have a little bit more. That's why he was drafted as an awfully high pick in the third round. So I would prefer, for me, I would prefer to see Delano, when the pads come on and in those preseason games, come up and whack people the way he was capable of doing in Michigan, and then allow Bradley McDougal to be deeper than the deepest.
Question number two. Now you got a chance to watch the quarterbacks. Russell has been fantastic throughout all of these practices. How about the backups? How'd they look yesterday?
Yeah, not as good as the OTA that I watched. So, two OTAs, and yesterday was a mandatory minicamp, and I think on the grade sheet, this was the lowest by far for both of those guys. And it was a lot more Magoo. And I think you're going to give, you know, Magoo as many opportunities as you possibly can. You know exactly, again, back to that point about McDougal, you know what Austin Davis is. And just as important, what he is not. And the player does, too. He doesn't pretend to be Brett Favre out there. He knows his limitations. So you're going to give Magoo every opportunity. And yesterday, there was like, oh, okay, yeah, you're a rookie. Oh, that's right, a rookie minicamp, when everything slowed down a little bit, you're just slinging it, man. You feel great. Like, man, this is easy. And all of a sudden, when those windows get real small, and all of a sudden Bobby and KJ are starting to fly in a tick up in some of the speed, and Shaquille's out there, and, man, there's just not a lot of open windows holding the ball, right, trying to extend the plays, then throwing late through a little pick six. So not as sharp yesterday for Magoo. Not surprised as a rookie, his things are going to pick up. Training camp will be the same. He's going to have some really good days, and he's going to have some learning days, and how quickly he learns will determine whether or not he's the backup on this roster opening day.
All right, question number three. Remember, a couple of years ago, the Seahawks had their big draft class, and everyone said, oh, these guys are going to play right away, and the rookies are going to give them an infusion this year. It's like, well, rookies sometimes do, but let's not start counting on rookies doing much of anything. Of the rookies you saw yesterday, Who looks like they may be willing to contribute in year one?
Yeah, I mean, Will Disley's going to contribute. You're going to have two and three tight end packages. I don't think there's any question about that. I would say from, again, the OTA period here to the mandatory camp, who's made already some incremental steps forward, is Rashad Penny. And actually, I was talking to somebody with the Seahawks. Says, does he remind you a little bit of Sean Alexander? Just as a guy that's 225 to 230 pounds, but A, there's a gliding nature to him. B, there's a real economy of effort. You know, you see some guys like Christian Michaelman, right? You just saw all that energy explode. And then you see a Rashad Penny that it's just like, wow, there's an effortless nature to this. And he doesn't have to set up this big cut by like sinking into it and then cutting back. Everything is done just like gliding. And man, did he look explosive yesterday. And then the other kid that's equally with the pads coming on is going to be Trey Flowers. I was standing next to Dave Wyman. I think at that point in practice, he's like, gosh, doesn't he look a little bit like Browner? I mean, he is just enormous at corner.
So tall.
He is so tall. And I think yesterday, maybe he had a little shoulder thing. He almost looked like he had shoulder pads on. Maybe they were just shells. They can't wear shoulder pads and hits. So maybe they were just a little bigger shells. Or heck, I don't know. Maybe it was just his shoulders. But he looked massive. I mean, massive playing that corner position. And when he can get his hands on guys and really play with physical contact, that will be, again, the evaluation and the judgment and how much he's going to push Byron Maxwell for that other spot.
Good stuff. That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42, a little breath of football tossed into what is mostly a big baseball day. We'll bounce back and forth a little bit. We'll get some other takeaways from Brock, who was at camp yesterday, and some more thoughts on Earl and the safeties, et cetera, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. As we said, Scott Service is going to join us at 9:30. We saw what may be the Mariners' defensive play of the year, though, last night. It was that kind of special. And it points out one of the major differences between what the Mariners are and what the Angels are. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.